Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show, Tuesday, May 19th.
Good morning.
Good morning. We have a beautiful day out.
We do.
But I don't know that it'll stay that way.
Why?
Because they forecast overcast sky for the entire week. But this morning I got up, there was not a cloud in the sky.
Yeah.
Now they're coming in, so we'll see. But to me, it's great weather. I like it. Not too hot, not too cold. It's fine by me.
You're like Goldilocks.
Yeah. But I realize that all those weather forecasts are useless. They really are, you know? I mean, if you check the weather 2 hours before and it's not what they say it is, then something's obviously wrong.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just saying. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah. I saw you produce some nice pictures yesterday.
Yes, we did.
A lot of them?
A lot.
Oh, well, I hope you post more.
We're going to. I think they need to go through the photographer first for approval, and she's going to send us the best ones.
Oh, nice.
Because we took, you know, it's like a million pictures.
Really?
You just keep snapping, and then...
Like different outfits and things like that?
Different outfits, and, you know, it's you strengthen numbers. So if you take a lot, there's going to be, you know...
There's bound to be a few good
right.
ones.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and Lauren and I have a really hard time, like... with our faces.
Oh, come on.
Like, we're not that serious of people, so to try and be like a sexy photo shoot or like right. something serious, we're just like, what do you do with
it's
your face
hard,
for this?
Right, yeah.
I don't know how not to make a weird face and like joke around. So it was like kind of awkward and uncomfortable. And
right.
Since the photographer is a friend, she helped us through it. But it was not easy.
Well, it's cool. It's always fun to take pictures, though, huh?
I think so. I love it. Yeah. I don't know that Lauren loves it as much, but I do because I'm a ham, and my mom has put me in front of the camera since I was born.
Really?
Yeah. So I have no issues with that. But I don't know. We'll see. Some of the pictures are a little scandalous.
Really?
Oh, wow. Got a few texts from my mom this morning telling me not to sell my soul.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so she feels...
I'm like, I'm 30. I've got a good grasp on what I'm willing to do and not willing to do.
So. That's true. But you were in lingerie, right? That black lingerie that you...
Yeah, well, yeah.
With fingers to the wind type of thing that you posed there. You went like this and Lauren went like that.
Oh, because we were showing what our handle is for Snapchat.
Which is what?
Two Drunk Girls TV. That's the word was above us. We were both pointing to it.
Oh, okay. Well, so much for that.
It's right there. You might want to look at that
again. I didn't pay attention.
Clearly. We got like 400 new followers because of that shoot yesterday.
Really?
Just on Snapchat. And that's all it was posted to. So hopefully when the photographer posts our photo on Instagram, we'll get more followers that way too.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, so there's like a lot of people watching that stuff, huh?
Yeah.
And Periscope.
Snapchat.
Is that Snapchat?
Yeah.
Snapchat?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Snapchat, that's where the pictures disappear.
Yes.
Okay.
You can also do videos. So the photographer has a lot of followers. And
right.
so she was posting pictures and videos of us during the shoot.
Right.
And then those people went and followed us.
Wow. So so I guess the attraction about it is that it's live, right? That's when, I mean, because many people have videos that they record and stuff, but this is like live, right? You think that's the attraction for a lot of people?
No, it's not
watching
live.
This? It's not live?
No, it's pictures and video that disappear. So they get posted.
I'm still confusing Periscope. Okay, you know what? You see, there come the 2.5 hours of sleep.
Right. Sorry.
I knew I would screw up this morning.
I'll make a PowerPoint presentation. We'll talk about it.
It's ridiculous to go to bed at 5, get up at 8. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Basically, what you took was a nap.
That's what I thought.
Right.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
You didn't sleep.
Yeah. Well, I did sleep very well during those 3 hours, let me tell you.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. But, you know, on a more somber note, I texted you last night.
Yeah.
Because I just had to, because I was totally in shock. We interviewed Dean Potter, if you remember. That was actually, I looked back, it was March 31st. That's when he released his film, When Dogs Fly.
Yeah.
And Dean Potter, for those of you who don't remember or didn't hear the interview, is an extreme sport guy who climbs rocks without ropes or anything.
It's like base jumping, right?
Right. Well, let's see. Base jumping is the wingsuit thing, right?
I don't know.
I guess. That's what it is. So first of all, he climbs rocks and mountains, not just rocks, mountains.
Right. Without any kind of harness.
Yeah, he's just got an emergency parachute. That's all he has.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and it's crazy when you see it. You know, I saw pictures. It's like he has to hope he finds fissures in the rock and stuff, you know, it's amazing. And then, but the amazing thing is that he would use a wingsuit and fly.
Yeah.
Jump off of cliffs and rocks and fly. And he would take his dog with him. His female dog is named Whisper. And he would take her on with him. And you can see it on YouTube. Just Google Dean Potter and you'll find him there. You can see at least the preview of the film, I think, the trailer. And you can see what's going on. I mean, the dog looks, I don't know. I don't know if the dog looks stressed out or having fun, whatever. But he said that the dog actually enjoys it. Mm-hmm. And some activities the dog actually refuses to go on. So he believes the dog understands what's going on.
Yes.
So the news is that I'm watching CNN and I wasn't even paying attention. And they're saying, you know, two guys died in Yosemite jumping off. And I looked at it and sure enough, they're saying Dean Potter. I said, oh my God. And then they showed him with the dog. They showed a clip from the video.
Yeah.
But they said the dog wasn't with him that time, which is amazing to me. I mean, you know, what are the chances? Because if he'd always take the dog, this was sort of unusual.
So he was jumping off of the thing?
Yeah, with a wingsuit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I wonder what happened, though, because so they both died.
They both died, right. And nobody knows. They only found the bodies. So far, they're trying to piece it together.
I wonder if they filmed it. You know how, like, they...
Yeah, they filmed all of them, yes.
Right.
You're right. So they need to... And they were found pretty far from each other, they say.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I don't know what happened, man, but the fact that they both went sounds suspicious to me, you know?
I mean, it could also be just like you said about the weather, like maybe they couldn't predict the wind or how they would
that's true.
Fly down.
Wow. I mean, it just looks amazing when you see it happening. You go, wow, they fly like a bird. But I guess that's what he wanted. So at least he died doing something he loved, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he probably knew the risks. I mean,
yeah, obviously. And it's fascinating. So then I went on CNN.com and I read a little background. And apparently he says when he was a kid still, he was envisioning these things and he dreamed that he died falling. And, you know, he often said maybe it's a premonition or something, you know.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, but it's inevitable, you know, when they don't stop doing it, you know, they keep on doing it.
You're pushing the limits, I think.
You know, your odds are increasing that something's going to happen. So, yeah, go figure. I mean, in the first place, even if they don't die, you just have to ask yourself, why did they do it in the first place, you know?
I'm not somebody, I mean, I can't even skydive. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I know.
I can barely take the elevator in this building because it makes noises. Like, you know, it's...
Yeah.
I risk my life, like, just leaving the house every day. I wouldn't want to add to that.
I know. So it was a little controversial that he would take his dog with him, but the dog survived. I wonder how people would have reacted if the dog went, you know. Ugh. It's like people are like, they seem to care more about animals than people.
Well,
you know?
I think that is because the animal doesn't have a choice.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It's not like, I don't want to go on this trip, you know.
Right.
No, you're absolutely right.
Sad.
Yeah, I know. What else did I want to say? I wanted to bring up one more thing, and of course I forgot about it. So never mind. So let's just go ahead and get to our guest. We have a guest sitting right here with us, and we're joined by Herbert Dodell. Welcome to the show, sir.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming in. Try to get a little closer to the mic so we can hear you nice and full.
How's that?
That's better. Are you an LA native?
No, actually I'm from New York State.
Really? Where in New York?
Small town called Tuckahoe, New York, 6,500 people.
Really?
There was once a TV show called Maud that was done in
Yes, Tuckahoe. I remember Maud. So that took place there?
Tuckahoe.
Really?
I don't know if they ever shot it there, but that's the...
Well, probably not.
Somebody probably in the management came from there and decided they needed a name for a town, so Tuckahoe worked.
There you go.
It was
go.
Once the capital of the colonies before the during the Revolution.
That's interesting. So maybe that's why they picked it or something.
George Washington actually slept there. I don't know where he was, but he slept in this tavern someplace. It's still there. It's a little memorial. Uh-huh. And when the British drove the colonials out of New York, they had to move the capital. The capital was New York at the time.
Right.
And so we were up about 40 miles and near the Bronx River, and it became the capital for like 3 days. That's our claim to fame.
Yeah.
Small town. Well,
yeah, yeah. So so you grew up there.
I did.
And at what point did you leave?
50 years ago this month.
At what point in your life back then? What were you doing? Was it after high school, after college?
No, after law school.
After law school. So you stayed in the small town even during law school.
Yeah, I commuted to school.
Really?
Yeah, I used to take the train every morning, an hour and a half in each direction.
Wow. Can you imagine that, Jen? Could you do it?
No. Yeah.
But that's the only place I had a chance to study.
Yeah.
The school let out at noon, and I worked from 1 o'clock till 10 o'clock every day.
Wow, so you
had
to
get
up
early.
That was the
reason I went to that law school, Brooklyn Law School, is because they didn't have staggered classes. You started at 9 and you were done at noon. So those of us who had to work were able to get out and do that.
Yeah, very cool. So now, did you go to college? When you were in college, did you take pre-law? I mean, what, or did you have any other? Do you have to take pre-law in order to go to law school?
Not really.
No?
I took every easy course they gave.
Really?
I went to the University of Pittsburgh, where I was this weekend, and I took general studies,
right,
with the expectation that I was going to go to law school.
Okay, so you had the plan already. So
plan since I'm 5 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
How does that happen to a five-year-old?
I know, lawyer out of all things.
Well, some of my relatives, I can't remember which one, said to me, "You're going to be a lawyer because you got such a big mouth."
Really?
I said, "Okay, if that's what I'm meant to be, you know, that's what I'll do."
Right.
So I never look backwards.
Wow. Amazing. That doesn't happen to that many people.
That happens. My son was 8 when he decided he was going to be a doctor, and he never changed his direction ever.
Wow. And that's probably the way to do it. I mean, you stay focused your whole life. You become good at it.
Well, he's motivated, and I was motivated. And
right.
It's been very good for us. The law business was very good.
Mm.
Is very good.
It still is. Are you still practicing?
Well, I'm a superior court judge half time.
Oh.
And because of my arrangement with the county, and I'm only working part time, I can keep my practice.
Nice.
So I do a little of that too.
Right. How does one become a judge?
Sorry, there's three ways. One, you get appointed by the governor, and then you got to go through all of the political processes.
Right.
Another is to get elected, which means raising money and running a campaign just like any other, like you're running for any particular office.
Right.
And the third way is to be appointed by the presiding judge, which has happened to me.
I see.
But you have to go through the whole process of taking all the tests and taking all the courses. You get vetted by all of the judges that are on the sitting judges on the bench. They circulate a note saying you're about to be appointed. Does anybody know you? If nobody blackballs you, and you get past all of the vetting process, you get appointed. You get appointed for 3 years. This is my third appointment. I get renewed every 3 years. And you got to take all the tests all over again, and you got to go through all the courses, and you have to be certified as an expert in various subjects before they'll assign you.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with me. I specialized in four subjects, and that's what I do now on assignment. Some months I'm in Van Nuys. Some months I'm in Long Beach, Santa Monica, Chatsworth, downtown, depending on wherever the need is. The month before, I get a schedule of where do I want to go. That was one of the reasons I didn't take the full-time appointment.
Yeah.
So you can still high risk when you take a full-time appointment because you could get sent to traffic court.
Really?
Which happened to a friend of mine.
Really?
Who the hell wants to spend the rest of your life listening to red light ticket cases? Yeah,
my dad was a traffic court judge for a while, and he was miserable.
Really?
It's awful. Yeah.
I said, I wasn't going to take that chance, and they could send you to Lancaster.
Uh-huh.
This way, I get to pick my places.
Yeah. Wow. And is he dead in law, too?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. He's a lawyer.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was also told at a young age I should be a lawyer.
And you decided to do it?
No.
That's why you're sitting here.
Right.
Exactly.
I'm talking, but in other ways.
Yeah.
But I told my kids, both of them, that I didn't want them to be lawyers. It really is a tough business.
Yeah.
People think every lawyer makes $1 million and everybody just rolls right over it. That's not the case. Most lawyers in this country barely make it.
Really?
Unless you're in the big firms and you make a partner and they give you whatever's left after they take their share. Most lawyers are out there scrambling.
Really? Is that because there's too many of them?
Yeah. In fact, it's interesting. I was talking to the dean of the law school at the University of Pittsburgh over the weekend. There was a dinner that I sat next to him and we had a nice chat.
Mm-hmm.
He said there's so many lawyers out there that they're all scrambling for the business. They take all the junk.
Mm.
And the law schools keep turning them out because it's profitable.
Right.
You know, the tuition is what the tuition is, and the more you have, the more you make.
Right.
And California's got over 350,000 lawyers in it.
Are you serious?
Yeah. You know,
wow.
Look at the bus stop. You know, there's somebody advertising all the time.
Wow. That's a lot of lawyers.
Yeah. Yeah, and they take junk stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of them go to, not to demean the program in its entirety, but these days people take classes on law school on the internet. They never see a school.
Yeah.
You know, they take an internet course.
Right.
And who knows how valid that is. And without the experience of actually being in a courtroom, if you're going to be a litigator, just learning the material from textbooks doesn't really get you there.
Yeah.
And so when they start out and they haven't gotten a big job someplace, they're hungry.
Yeah.
And they'll take whatever they can get.
Yeah.
People always ask me, how do you pick a lawyer? You know, it wouldn't be off the back of the bus.
No.
Yeah, that's true. But those are what they call ambulance chasers, right? I mean, they go after the people that that are looking to make some money from personal injury.
That's true.
Many times.
That's true. Yeah. I thought when I got appointed that I was going to be very anti-insurance company because I had been chasing insurance companies for forever.
Really?
But I found out from the bench side that there's a lot of merit to the insurance company's arguments about fraudulent claims and build-ups, and the doctors work with the lawyers, and the experts get paid on the side. It's a nasty business.
Yeah.
But it's very profitable. You can hit a couple of good cases, and you're done.
Really?
Yeah, you hit a big one, and you're done.
Right. Sit for the rest of your life.
And you can do it. In this business, you can do it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you never know where it's going to come from. Remember, it's like that old Paul Newman movie years ago where he's in the very back of the law firm in some little cubbyhole office and whatever. And this little old lady walks in with a dog. And nobody wanted to talk to her. They thought she was some strange old lady. And they pushed her back, and he'd end up in his office.
Uh-huh.
It turned out she owned the railroad.
Really?
And he became a partner and all of that.
Wow.
It's a great story.
So you never know.
Great movie. No, you do. And you never know where it's going to come from either.
Right. Wow. Amazing. So let's get a little bit... I want to get to the present as well. We're talking to Herbert Dodel. You're a restraining order expert.
Yeah, I got assigned to restraining orders when I got appointed in 2008 and then took all the courses and the tests and everything else and got assigned to restraining orders.
Wow, very interesting.
So that's what I do a fair amount of the time.
Yeah.
Was doing a fair amount of the time.
Right. And that's very fascinating. But let's go back a little bit. So you went to law school. You got your law degree. What happened then? Where did you move somewhere or did you stay
here? I moved here. Actually, I was a lawyer for ABC.
Uh-huh. And down here?
in New York.
Oh, in New York.
And then I transferred out here and got into what's called business affairs.
Okay. And did you initiate the move, or did they tell you you have to move?
I initiated the move. Cool. I came out here for a summer, uh-huh. and I saw the beautiful women with blue eyes and blonde hair surfing. Yeah. And I thought about the 9-degree days in New York, and I said, this is not really a choice.
Yeah, there you go.
This was an easy call.
Right, right.
So I moved out here. I had $600 and a car, and started scratch.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, at least you'd been here before, so you knew what you were moving to.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. I mean, and we have a lot of New Yorkers here. Did you notice that? A lot of people from New York move
tons.
Here.
Yeah. Tons.
Yeah. Because I guess they still want the big city, but they want totally different climate, you know?
It's odd. It's a very strong attraction. The weather is a big deal here.
It really is.
Yeah.
In fact, when my son came out to visit, he practices medicine in New York. He came out here on one of these beautiful Southern California days, and I said, don't you miss what we got here? You were born and raised here. Uh-huh. Considering what you got in New York, he says he doesn't miss it here at all.
Really?
Really?
He loves New York.
So, yeah. I feel like the people that love it really love it.
They'll sacrifice the weather.
And all
there's
it.
Energy. It's yeah. There's a whole different... Yeah. I was there about 2 weeks ago, and there's a certain excitement. There's an energy there that you don't have here.
Right.
And that's because I think back here.
I think it's because people are outside, you know. You're seeing people walking. Where here you don't see that, you know. So I think that's where the energy comes from, because also so the shops, the stores are geared toward people that walk. You know, like bakeries, you'll smell the bakery outside and all that, you know. It's just like I know I get the same feeling in New York. You get the energy that you don't get here. It's like when I'm there, I feel like L.A. is like a graveyard or something. You know, it's that quiet and laid back.
Slower. Yeah. No question about it.
Much slower.
But all you're surrounded by is cement in New York.
Yeah, I don't like that.
You're too young to be surrounded by cement. There's plenty of time for that.
That's true, yeah. Cool. So you moved here. Did you start? Oh, so you were working for ABC.
I worked for ABC in business uh-huh. affairs. And then I went to a television production company. I worked there as resident counsel and business affairs person. Then I gave that up and went into law enforcement and became a deputy district attorney.
Really?
Yeah, I decided that sounded like a lot of fun and interesting and exciting. And that's what I did.
Really? And was it fun and exciting?
It was great. It was a great job, except they didn't pay very well. And I got a call one day from Warner Brothers. A friend had recommended me. They were looking for somebody to be the head of their business affairs. And they paid 5 times what I was getting as a deputy DA.
Yeah, like
and a
that.
Car and a nice all the perks and no checks to pick up. And I said, this sounds like heaven. So that I went to Warner Brothers. Uh-huh. And after I left there, I went into private practice and did civil and criminal litigation, mainly insurance claims dealing with property, you know, arson cases, fraud cases, claims that weren't getting paid by the insurance company. Mm. Somebody had to take them on, so it was me.
Yeah.
And I did that until I got appointed in 2008.
I see. Very cool. So do you still have your practice?
Yeah.
You said you still work in addition to being a judge.
Yeah. I work pretty much selectively.
Yeah.
It's a good place to be in.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it is. Look, the law business was very good for us.
Yeah.
Put my kids through school, and we traveled around the world. We did really well. But I had decided at one time that practicing law was not what I wanted to do the rest of my life. Uh-huh. And I got a great sense of satisfaction when I was on the bench. It started out, I was only going to be one day a month.
Right.
The person who solicited me to do this is a judge in Van Nuys, Judge Cato, Jimmy Cato, who's now one of my closest friends. He said, would you volunteer? We need somebody to help us. We're 4 judges short. So I said, well, what's it going to take? Well, you got to go through this process. And I said, well, okay, what does it take? And how much do they pay? The pay is zero, and you work when we assign you. Uh-huh. So I said, okay, well, 1 day a month sounds pretty good. Well, that grew to 2 days, to 4 days, to half time. And then they started calling me regularly. Can you cover Long Beach tomorrow? Can you cover Santa Monica on Thursday? And so I got on the rotation, and I've put in now over 400 days.
Wow. Yeah. It's kind of like I used to be a substitute teacher. It was the same way. It's like in the morning they tell you where you're going, you know. And so you're like all over the place.
Yeah, but I also do – I do small claims, which is frontier justice, which is, you know, it's Judge Judy, you know, it's really accurate. Right. That's fun.
And that's probably fun for you, right?
Not a lot of intellect goes into it. It's all common sense. You know, and then I do unlawful detainers, which are landlord tenants or foreclosures.
Hmm.
That's much more intellectual and more technical. And then I do civil litigation, general civil litigation, whatever goes into that.
Right.
That's real intellectual because you get to do some real research and thinking. And then I do restraining orders, which is Jerry Springer without the chairs. I mean, they yell and scream at each other, and it's the stories are incredible.
And those stories are from the courtroom.
Yeah, they're real cases.
Right.
Oh, I've had some very interesting cases.
Wow. Well, we'll get to those. But tell us, first of all, what it is to be a restraining order expert. For those of you, by the way, just joining us, you can go to the website. It's restrainingorders.expert, and which
good
is
memory.
Cool.
You got a good memory.
Well, I'm looking right at it.
Oh, okay. You should have taken the compliment for what it was worth.
I know. Well, next time, you know.
He's honest.
I'm an honest person.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it is. It's very serious, and I usually do a 5-minute speech before I actually start the process, because it's life altering.
Right.
In fact, the other day when I was in Pittsburgh, I was talking to somebody who was a CEO of some corporation, and I asked him, as I had asked other people, what do you do if you run a background check or search and you find somebody's got a restraining order against them? What does that do in terms of the evaluation of whether they get the job? He said they don't get the job.
Really?
No, because they're concerned about liability. If
That's
somebody
true.
Comes in and does something crazy – and they knew that that person had a proclivity for that, because some judge had decided some beliefs that they were unstable and were a risk, they don't hire them.
Yeah.
So if a restraining order is granted, it's life-altering. And it's on your record forever. It does never come off.
And it becomes public information, right?
It is. In fact, my clerk told me not too long ago that, that she did a credit check on somebody, and it's on your
even credit
Experian,
report, huh?
Whatever those
wow.
go, it's out there.
Yeah. Wow.
So if you go out of the country and you're coming back in and they check the names, you're going in the little room to be searched.
Yeah.
Because somebody thinks you're
dangerous. A threat.
Dangerous or disruptive.
Right. Yeah.
And they are. Some of them are absolutely lunatics.
Yeah. So people get restraining orders usually for what? For being stalked or being harassed by someone that they usually know, right?
No, not necessarily that they know. No. Stalking, we see a fair amount of celebrity people who are stalked.
Yes.
They never show up, the celebrities, once or twice.
Yeah.
They send the lawyers usually.
Right.
And because hearsay is admissible in these hearings, with which I have some disagreement.
Yeah.
Everything comes in. And so they just bring in declarations from a bunch of people that they saw this happening and that happening. And a lot of people don't have representation because they don't. They don't really know how to deal with a defense.
Right.
And they end up with these restraining orders that are good for, usually I issue them for 3 years, and they're renewable. But once it's on the record, there is no methodology, none, to get it off.
Really? Wow.
Forever.
So people really have to think about that.
Well, it goes on. In fact, I rode with the sheriff not too long ago. A friend of mine was a sheriff. And I was saying, how does it really work in the field? He says, come on, I'll take you for a ride.
Uh-huh.
So I went in and he punched the buttons. You know, I gave him a name of a couple of cases that I had decided. And there it was. They go by the Social Security number or the case number, and there it says everything you need to know. So the cop in the field stopping somebody finds out that there is a restraining order out there, they're going to view that person with a lot more caution.
Yeah.
You know, what happens in traffic stops, sometimes they get out of hand.
Right.
And so it's forever. And sometimes, not sometimes, often, there's a temporary restraining order. And those are given one-sided. So the other side has no chance to present an argument.
Really?
They fill out a form.
By accusation.
Yeah, and they put in the wildest accusations, some of which have no connection to reality.
Oh.
It's revenge or anger or jealousy or...
Yeah.
Or the neighbors are fighting with each other, the parrot's making too much noise.
Right.
And
so it's way too easy to make that accusation.
Very easy. And wow. We don't know because we don't even see the people.
Right.
We read them in chambers, and you read it, and it says, looks pretty awful. You got to do something to protect that person.
Right.
When the story is nonsense, and it's all made up.
Like somebody could be like, I hate my ex-boyfriend and I'm going to file a restraining order just in case.
Yeah, but you make up a story to justify the issuance of the restraining order.
Right.
It's discretionary. And when you read it, you have to decide whether or not there's a need to protect somebody versus inhibiting someone else's rights. It's a real balancing act. Constitutionally, it's a real balancing act. Free speech versus... the right to be safe and secure from being harassed.
Right.
It's called civil harassment. That's what it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
Restraining order, it's a fancy word for civil harassment.
Yeah.
So does a temporary restraining order stay on your record, too, forever?
Yep.
Wow.
And you never had a chance to defend yourself.
What?
Forever.
Really?
That's why we've had many discussions among my colleagues. I don't grant that many of them.
Yeah.
Because it's life-altering.
Yeah.
And you have a hearing in 21 days, and sometimes the petition never even shows up.
Really?
And it gets dismissed. You know, it dissolves because it's temporary. But that's still on your record forever. Forever.
Wow.
That's why winning is really important. People don't take it seriously enough, and if they get in violation of a temporary restraining order, they go to jail. It's quasi-criminal is what it is.
Yeah.
Because we have the ability to incarcerate people for violating the order. And people do all the time.
So, in other words, so it's thinkable, it's feasible that you would be accused by someone. It would go on your record, stay there forever, and you can't defend yourself. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you can defend yourself because the record will show that that the temporary order was dismissed and there was no ultimate permanent injunction. But every time you have to explain something, it was there to start with, it's a problem. It puts you on the defensive.
Right. Yeah. You see, and that worries me. I mean, you know, just anybody can get you in trouble, so it means don't get people pissed off at you, you know? But this brings up another thing that I was thinking of as a man, and that is if a woman accuses someone of attacking them, like sexually or something, you know? And the thing is, it's like, yes, I know you can defend yourself, you go to court and everything, but all the hassle before that, you know, it's just like all they have to say is he attacked me and they arrest you, right?
Well, I can't speak in terms of generality, but I suppose they need more than just somebody saying he did that or she did that.
Well, but let's say I call the police and I'm saying my boyfriend just, hit me or beat me up or, you know, whatever. And or let's say, you know, if it's a beating, they're going to look for marks and things like that. But let's say just forced himself on me, whatever. And, you know, and I'm afraid and all this stuff. Don't they just take her at a word?
The police department just writes a report. They don't make
determinations. So they need an arrest warrant.
The way it works, criminal law is a little different. You make the complaint to the police department, but they don't have any prosecutorial ability. They take it to the district attorney's office or the city attorney's office if it's a misdemeanor. And the DA decides, and I was a filing deputy, so I remember cops coming in and asking for arrest warrants and things like that.
Mm.
They get arrested. I have a lot of cases. I've had rape, child molestation cases, many over the 7 years or so that I'm doing this. And so people say, well, why are they going to civil harassment? What about prosecution? Well, prosecution takes a long time.
Right.
In the meantime, what do you do about somebody who's a current continuing threat? Right. Most people don't understand a single event does not give rise to justification for a restraining order. Getting beat up one time with no risk that it's going to recur, their request is going to get denied. It has to be evidence of a continuing course of conduct. Those are the words from the statute in order to justify the imposition. And people just keep on doing it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had two doctors fighting with each other, and he was harassing her. She was working in the clinic where he was the supervising doctor. And he took her friendliness as a sign of her interest in him romantically, and she had no interest in him romantically. And he was texting her 40, 50 times a day.
Wow.
Driving her nuts. And it was a temporary restraining order that was out there when they were in there, and he was violating it. And he said, "She loves me." I said, What don't you understand about don't bother me? Is that a problem for you?"
It sounds like Jerry Springer.
Well, you know, I ended up giving her the restraining order because he wouldn't stop. Even when he was given the opportunity, he wouldn't stop.
So he still thinks she loved him.
But she came back. He came back a month. They came. Two of them came back a month later, and asked to see me, and I was interested, so I saw them, and she didn't want him to have this thing on his record forever, and he finally recognized she didn't love him, and he has a new girlfriend. And they wanted me to, you know, to reverse the order, which you really can't do. You can modify them, but he still got it on his record.
Wow!
How do you modify it, or what do you?
Well, you show that the terms are, you can make it a shorter period of time. The order could be over in 3 months. Sometimes you don't go the 3 years. You can give him 30 days, 90 days, 6 months, a year.
Did this guy get like mental help?
I don't know. We don't get into any of that. But I have some fascinating stories. In fact, I'm writing a book.
Oh,
really?
Good.
Yeah. Okay.
By the way, just in case, the book is called From the Trench to the Bench.
That's a good name.
And they're real stories as to how the law business works.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds exciting.
Who are the judges? Who are the lawyers? What do you do? What is a trial all about? How do you get hosed by the lawyers who are looking to make money at your expense? It deals with the real intricacies of the law business. And I have a chapter in there on restraining orders. And yeah. I have some great stories that go along with, like, one neighbor was seeking a restraining order against the other for killing their cat.
Really?
Yeah, and the story was that they came home and their cat was in a bag on their front porch.
Oh, wow. Oh.
So they believed that the neighbor had done it because they didn't get along with the neighbors. And so I said to the one person, I said, "You got an autopsy report?"
Yeah.
I thought there was like zero chance.
An eyewitness.
No chance, right? They had an autopsy report from the veterinarian. But it said that the cat was killed by blunt force trauma, probably car.
Wow.
So I asked the neighbor, I said, "Well, what happened?" He said, "We came home, the cat's laying on our front door, on our front yard. Obviously, it was hit by a car. And we wanted to do the nice thing, so we put it in a bag and delivered it next door."
Yeah.
And I asked the other person, "Did you see him hit the cat?" "No, no, 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 no." I said, "So what do you really want me to do here? You want a restraining order that won't kill your next cat?" It's a done deal.
Yeah.
Also, if it's a neighbor, aren't they already like within the feet that the person can't approach with a restraining order?
Well,
how does that work?
You have to craft it differently depending on the circumstances. For example, I've had cases with roommates. How do you do a restraining order with somebody who's a roommate?
Yeah.
10 feet.
Can't they also move out?
Yeah, well, we don't get into landlord-tenant issues.
Right.
But look, I've had cases where they're fascinating.
How much does it cost to, like, file one, just so I understand?
Nothing.
Really?
Because the system is engineered where if you check a box on the application, it's called a CH-100 form application, that you're in fear for your life, et cetera, et cetera, their fee is waived. So you don't pay a filing fee. You have no risk.
Mm.
You lose, you can't be sued for malicious prosecution, and you had a free ride at it.
So everybody probably checks that box.
If they don't, sometimes the clerk will help them fill it out.
Oh, gosh.
I've always had a resistance to that, personally.
Yeah.
There should be a way to monitor, because sometimes you get... I've had cases... days where I've had 30 cases on the calendar in the morning. You don't get a lot of time when you have 30 cases to deal with in the morning.
Right.
And the next morning you're going to have the same load. And so you have to have turnover.
Right.
You don't get a chance to spend 3-4 hours talking to people. You get 15 minutes.
Wow.
You do the best you can to get all the stories.
Right.
But people come in with attitudes, serious attitudes. There's this one lady. You get a lot of girlfriend boyfriend things.
Yeah,
where there's two ladies. One is claiming that the boyfriend is now their boyfriend, used to be the boyfriend of the other lady, and the other lady is mad, and so they get into a scrap over who, and the guys never show up.
So Jerry Springer.
It's the two ladies. Yeah. I had one lady came in. We actually videotaped it later on as a pilot for a show. She said, well, she was pepper sprayed. So I said, well, there's nothing in the police report about pepper spray, and there's nothing in your report about pepper spray. And the lady said, the respondent said, I don't even own pepper spray.
Really?
I said, is there a boyfriend involved here? Sure enough, that's what it was.
Really?
It was the spurned girlfriend going after the new girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
And so I was going to deny it. She says, you don't know anything. I said, oh, I do know something. She says, what do you know? I said, no, if you keep on talking, I got a little room for you. I said, you'll have a chance to talk to the wall.
Yeah.
And you're going to get the same result. And she moaned and groaned all the way. I had her escorted out by the bailiff because she was yelling at me, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. No. She pepper sprayed me. But she tried to. I said, she tried to. She didn't actually do it. No, she tried to. So the story was changing as she was changing.
Right. You see, that's the thing. If I were like a judge, I probably wouldn't be able to stand the stupidity of some people, you know? I mean, you're sitting there, you're probably thinking, I'm like a little, like a little cop here or like a kindergarten teacher or something.
No, but you have to treat every litigant with humanity.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, that's
what I'm saying. But
you laugh sometimes to yourself.
Right.
But you have to be respectful because most people have limited exposure to the law,
right,
or the courtroom, and this is their one moment, and you want them to go out feeling that they got a fair shot at it.
Yeah.
The reality is that the cases are sometimes really so dumb that you want to break out in laughter. One lady came in and said that she was being manipulated by the brain waves from an alien. The other person was an alien.
No.
I said, really? Did she speak English? And she's an alien, and she's using her mind waves to make me crazy and whatever. You can imagine that she didn't get the restraining order. But the fact of the matter is they come in with these kind of crazy stories.
And you can't send them somewhere, like, for psychiatric help?
No.
There's none of that?
No. So you're saying there's no, like, downside to this. I mean, you know, a person can make an accusation and that's it. You're in trouble.
People could file all day. They can literally go through, like, a list and just take everybody to court that they know.
Yeah, they probably can.
So what do you think about that kind of law? I mean, does it make sense to you?
Well, I'm trying to lobby for some changes.
Good.
I think it's important that there be a mechanism to expunge records when the orders are not granted, and it was only a TRO because it deprives the person of due process.
Yeah.
That's also, I mean, that's like guilty until proven innocent.
Right,
so
exactly.
Isn't that the opposite?
Well, you know,
what?
I was talking to a colleague of mine who was doing restraining orders in another court. I won't mention which one. And he told me he issues 85% to 90% he issues the TROs. I said, that's crazy. I give 5% to 10%.
Wow.
I mean, I look at these really carefully. But sometimes they're justified. They're absolutely justified.
Right.
Right.
And those, you can generally get a sense from the body language and some of the dialogue. Some of the people break down and you know it's genuine. Sometimes you know it's not genuine. But it's always an inquiry into motivation.
Yeah,
because these people, neighbors fighting with each other, too much noise. In fact, one case, somebody said that the next door neighbor's parrot was keeping them up all night with all the squawking, and they wanted a restraining order to keep the people from having their parrot squawking all night.
Right.
So I said, I'll tell you how we're going to settle this case. I try very hard to settle cases. That's one of my major focuses, because I tell them settlement means there's no record. You lose, there is. And so I said, here's the easy solution. Move the parrot to the other side of the house. That doesn't take a genius to figure that one out. I said, I'll tell you what. You move the parrot, and I'll dismiss the case. And that's what they did.
Oh.
How simple.
Yeah.
Well, there's another one where three girls beat up another girl in school. You get a lot of kids doing things. Hey. They beat her up, hospitalized her. And so I had the parents were all there. And I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You all want to go to college? This will affect your ability to do that. I said, I'll tell you what. If you change schools, you go to three separate schools, not the same school, separate from the girl that you beat up, and you come back in 2 weeks with proof from the principals of these three schools that you're enrolled there, and I'll dismiss it. They came back, they all changed schools, and we got it settled, and they don't have this thing on their record for the rest of their lives, and we got it resolved. They're never going to see this girl again.
Yeah.
They're not even in the same school. And I broke up the clique of the three girls together because they're all in three separate schools. If they want to get together, they can meet each other at the coffee shop or whatever they go
That's
to.
That's true.
But do they have a criminal record at all for No. beating somebody up? And
No, because the criminal cases are separate. Many times there's a criminal case pending while we're still doing the civil restraining orders. And sometimes I had a couple of rape cases where the defendant, called the respondent in this court, wanted to testify, and I tell him, you know what? If you testify, and they had lawyers, if you testify, you're going to be waiving your Fifth Amendment rights, and the possibility is that the DA will use your testimony in this case, in the criminal case that's pending. Do you really want to testify? And both of them did. The two of them that I can remember, both testified.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, so they get pretty serious. This was a, one was a 6-year-old girl. It was being allegedly molested. The other one was 12 years old and had been molested and raped over a 2-year period.
Ugh.
And finally she talked to her school guidance counselor, and that's how the thing got reported.
Mm.
But she was 12 years old when it started.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I hear some, you know, some of the shows here, they bring like, you know, like survivors of abuse and things like that. And the stories you hear are just like unbelievable. You know, I can't believe that people can do things like this to children and totally destroy their soul, you know. And but I would imagine that something like that is more important. I mean, it has a lot more weight than just a restraining order. That's a crime. Big time.
Well, the crime part has nothing to do with our court. That's handled through the district attorney's office.
Right.
But
you have to figure out whether something happened.
On the 6-year-old girl, I denied that restraining order because I concluded, number one, I actually cross-examined the little 6-year-old girl myself, tastefully, of course. And she was prepared real well by her mother, who had a beef with the party that they were accusing.
Right.
And it was a setup.
Wow.
And there was no physical evidence. There was no medical reports. There was no nothing. Supposedly he touched her above her clothing. Uh-huh. So there was no physical evidence. And the little girl, just the story was just too pat for me.
Wow.
You know, the way I asked the questions, that's what I did, was cross-examine people as a prosecutor and as a defense lawyer. And I denied that one.
And is there any punishment for the mother who then has her child as a pawn in her game? Like
no. No, they lost. The attorney's fees are available, but the party has to have an attorney.
Oh, yes.
If they're in what they call pro per and there's no attorneys involved, you lose.
Yeah.
End of the story.
Wow.
And there's no consequence for that mother who was obviously bad parenting and, I mean, making false accusations and things?
No penalty.
Wow. Yeah. The law obviously sometimes does not make sense. I think everybody knows that. But for the most part, you know, that's all we have. So we have to go with that. We're about to close the show. Herbert Dodell, the website is restrainingorders.expert. So you're writing a book now, right? When do you expect it to be published?
End of the year.
Cool. So you have something to look forward to.
I've written 300 pages.
Really?
And
well, you're almost
I'm
there.
Filling in with great story, terrific stories.
Awesome.
And it's a primer, really, for people who will get caught up in the legal system who don't know what it's really all about.
Right.
You know, what's going to happen to me? What's reasonably predictable to happen to me? We outline it based on my 51 years of practicing. So
sounds good. So do you want to promote your private practice, too, while you're here?
Sure. What I'm doing now is I'm not taking any more assignments for restraining orders, And I'm acting as a consultant for people who either want them or have to defend themselves.
Mm.
And I did one last week. What I do is I read all the papers. I help you prepare them because I know what we're looking for and what you don't want to say.
Uh-huh.
And then I give the people advice in a consultation, a personal consultation. Tell them how best to either get one or to defend themselves against one when they're trying to get one against you. And I prep them for their hearings.
Right. Well, you can't beat that, you know. I mean, you have a lawyer that's been doing this for many years. You know probably the ins and outs of everything here. You're also a judge. I can't see how somebody can go wrong if they need help with that stuff.
No, now I know who to call.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
I'll leave you my card.
Thanks.
Okay. And for those of you who can't have the card physically, go to restrainingorders.expert. And you'll find out everything about Herbert Odell. Herbert, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. It's very fascinating, like you said it would be. And it's nice to meet a judge and get some of the questions that we have answered that I always wondered about, you know. So, and obviously some of the laws I think need some modification.
We need to tweak some of this.
Yeah, yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you all for joining us. Jen, thank you as always.
Thank you, Sam.
And we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.